On this week's episode, we mostly just talk about my top 10 favorite albums of 2018. If you like the show, you can check out the companion blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. The show's hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. We're available at iTunes and CastBox and on other podcasting apps. Just start typing Empty Checking with Derek Brink and we pop right up. If you want to know more about me, go over to derekbrink.com. And if you like the music that you hear throughout the show, check out derekbrink.bandcamp.com. It's all there. It's all available for free or more if you want to pay for it. And I appreciate every download. As always, I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Checking. Out there, checkmates. Decided I liked it. Gonna keep calling you checkmates. Get used to that. Gonna be checkmates, at least for this foreseeable future. How's it checking, checkmates? Went too far, ruined it. Not gonna edit this. Hope everybody's doing okay. Hope you had a Merry Christmas or whatever you celebrate. Most of you probably observe some kind of practice for Christmas, even if you don't exactly celebrate it or agree with it or what have you. Most folks tend to you'll at least get the day off normally. You'll probably spend it opening a present with someone. No offense to anybody that didn't, but most of us probably did. So Merry Christmas or happy whatever holiday you happen to celebrate. Not to take anything away from any other holiday. This used to be a lot easier to do in like the 80s. You could just say a thing and people knew you meant well. Happy that. Hope everybody had a good one. Had a pretty good Christmas myself. Usual stuff, mostly. The highlight of it was the family Christmas gathering on Christmas Eve. We've always done ours on Christmas Eve. Just as far back as I can remember. I don't know when that started. Probably something to do with, I'm sure when I was younger we used to like see the grandparents or something on Christmas Day. But as far back as I can remember, we did Christmas stuff, at least with the family, on Christmas Eve. Christmas morning, when I was, you know, small, Santa would visit, but that was kind of the end of that. Maybe the theory was you can play with all the stuff you got on Christmas Eve on Christmas Day. Maybe that there was some kind of logistic reason for it. Never really thought about it until now. All I know is my parents were smarter than a lot of parents. Because for those of you who have children, you'll know that all parents, in fact, most grown-ups in general, personally know Santa. So my parents, knowing Santa as they did, always arranged for it that, conveniently, Santa agreed that my parents could always give us better gifts than what he gave us. So years later, when Santa stops giving you gifts as an adult, it was okay because my parents always gave us better gifts than Santa did. And, of course, my brother and I are adults now, and now we know Santa. So, like, we get to talk to Santa and arrange for stuff for the kids in our lives. Not that I have kids, Dave does. But that was a pretty good arrangement. Mom and Dad struck with Santa. I would recommend it to all of the parents out there, or would-be parents, or eventual parents, or what have you. It worked out pretty good. So maybe that was part of it. Just we got all the good stuff on Christmas Eve, and it was awesome and great. And the next morning, you know, Santa gave us a couple of little things that was kind of, oh, nice bonus gifts that aren't as great, you know, and maybe that was part of it. I don't know. Whatever it is, we've been on Christmas Eve for as long as I can remember, and we did Christmas Eve again this year, and it was good to see everybody and good to give gifts and to get gifts. And I'm not going to sit here and do a whole episode of telling you what I got for Christmas. That's a little bit tacky. I'm sure I did some of that last year. In fact, I know I did some of that last year, but I don't know. That doesn't feel great. I considered sitting here and telling you my favorite stuff that I got other people, but that really boils down to just like a couple of things, because there are only a couple I was really excited about. Although the stuff I was excited about, I was pretty excited about. But Regardless, I'm not going to sit here and talk about what was given and gotten for Christmas. Is gotten a word? Let's say gotten's a word. I don't know. I'm not going to talk about the stuff that exchanged hands at Christmas, because that just seems a little bit tacky. I'm just going to say we had a pretty good one. It was good to see everybody. There was good food. I ate too much of it. I still feel terrible from it. I hope everybody out there had a similar good experience. We'll leave it at that. There's probably some housekeeping stuff I need to do here at the top of the show. I have scrawled down notes and I can't read any of them. Actually, it looks like everything else on the list is end of show stuff. It was just kind of wishing people a Merry Christmas. Oh, one housekeeping thing I do want to clear up, though. In the last episode, I just released my cover of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, and that's been pretty well received. I've been happy with the response to that. I said on the podcast a couple of times, check my website, check my website, check my website. Problem is, I can't seem to get into the editor for my website to update the site. I don't know what's wrong there. I'm trying to figure it out. So my website says nothing about it. So go over to DerekBrinktopBandcamp.com if you haven't done that already, and you can listen to and download the Hallelujah single there. If you put zero as your purchase price, you get it for free. If you put in more, then you pay me a little, and that's nice. It'll help me cover the copyright. Because I did everything nice and legal. I purchased the license and whatnot. So, go check out the Hallelujah single if you haven't. I'm immensely proud of it. It might be one of the best things I've done. It's some of the best singing I've done on recording that's out there. And I like the arrangement that I arrived at. I hope it does Mr. Cohen justice, although I feel like I'm incapable of doing that because he's one of those gift from God artists that you get once in a lifetime. But nevertheless, I'm pretty happy with my version. I hope you listen to it. That's the last of the housekeeping I'm gonna do. We're moving along at a pretty good clip here already. We're gonna play a little bit of music, and we're gonna come back, and we're gonna talk about my top 10 albums of 2018. Can you believe that we're already at the end of 2018 and I'm doing this list? It seems impossible. It was a hard list to write, but we'll get into that in a little bit. We'll come back with my top 10 and a few honorable mentions and whatnot of 2018 after the break here. Okay, folks, it's almost the end of 2018 by the time you hear the next episode, because remember, we're on an every other week schedule now. And by the way, let's just say about me, I'm the kind of genius that puts the week that he's on the couple of days after Christmas. So, like, I'm recording this the day after Christmas, and it's going to go up, like, late Thursday, maybe Friday. Yeah, that's not going to be stressful, scheduling an upload for the week of Christmas. That's genius. That's genius work right there. Anywho, after you hear, like, the next episode is going to be taking place in 2019, which is a year I can't even imagine. Who would ever think that we'd get that far into something? It doesn't matter. Look, we're at the end of 2018. Anybody who knows me knows the deal. You're going to get a list out of me of my top 10 favorite albums of that year. Some basic qualifications. It can't be a covers album. It can't be a live album. It can't be a greatest hits. There's probably a few other can't be's in there. I come close to breaking my rules at one point on this one, but I don't quite go over. The albums need to be new material, entirely new material released that year. So it has to be from released in the year 2018, new material, not live, not rehashes, not greatest hits, etc., etc., etc. Those are the basic criteria. I've got 10. I've also got some honorable mentions, and the honorable mentions are probably worth talking about more than the top 10, because if you've listened to this show, you'll know that I've already touched on all of the top 10 once we get to the end of the list. So I'm actually going to start with my honorable mentions. I did a full blog post on this on my WordPress blog. If you go to derekbrink.wordpress.com, it's currently the top post there, but if it's moved down, I'm sure you can search it and find it. Or as much as I blog these days, it may be the top post for the rest of the year. Who knows? And I'm talking about the year 2019, which we're not in yet. But yeah, I did a full blog post, so I won't get too deep into this, but there's some stuff in the honorable mentions I haven't talked about that I want to talk about, and then I'll get into the top 10. Because if I just do the top 10, then what reason do you have to listen to the honorable mentions? So we'll do this first. Honorable mention to the Bottle Rockets, BitLogic. Big fan of the Bottle Rockets. They're local boys. They do good Americana stuff or alt country or whatever you want to call it. I personally prefer the term Americana. I liked their previous album, South Broadway Athletic Club, a lot better, which is unfortunately coloring my view of this album, which is a very good album. It's just not the album that I loved like 2 years ago. So it's got that horrible thing where a perfectly good album is outshined by the one right before it, in my opinion anyway. And that's making my enjoyment of it a little bit lesser than it would have been otherwise. Because I at the same time, though, I don't want to sound like I'm running it down. It's a really good release. I just was so in love with the previous album that this one fell short of the top 10 as a result, because I listened to it and then want to listen to the previous album, which is, it stands on the shelf perfectly well next to the rest of the Bottle Rockets collection. If the previous album hadn't been so stellar, this probably would have made the top 10 list. As it is, it's just a very good Bottle Rockets record. The Highway 70, Blues on it is perfect, and is a perfect description of what all of us in St. Louis go through all the time, trying to drive down 70. Really good album, just didn't quite make the top 10. Also in my honorable mentions is Mumford & Sons' Delta, which is continuing on in the electric vein. I actually wrote about this on the Empty Checking blog rather than talking about it a couple weeks ago. It's a good album. It sounds kind of U2-ish in its way. It's continuing with the electric sound, like I just said. They aren't doing the acoustic banjo-y thing anymore. Pluses and minuses to that. I've actually realized in the past year that I feel the same way about Mumford & Sons. Or actually, let me reverse that. Most people probably feel the way about Mumford & Sons that I feel about Arcade Fire. Because I look at Arcade Fire and I remember the first couple, three, maybe four albums that Arcade Fire did, and I think, wow, that was a really great band who is now doing music I hate. I have not been able to tolerate the last two Arcade Fire records. Don't like them, can't stand them. Not the same band that I fell in love with. And I think everybody else has that with Mumford & Sons. I really like what Mumford & Sons are doing. I thought it was a bold choice to plug in and to continue down writing still the same solid lyrics and still the same solid emotion in their songs, but just in a completely different setting. And I like that a lot, and there's some opportunity for them to bridge out and do different things as a result of that. And I like Delta. I liked the one before it, Wilder Mind. Wilder? It doesn't matter. You know the one before this one, the one where they plugged in for the first time. I like both of those albums a lot. Just fell short of the top 10 because I liked it, but it didn't absolutely blow me away, is the long and short of it. Trampled by Turtles put out Life is Good on the Open Road. For years, based on the name alone, I assumed that Trampled by Turtles was some kind of crappy jam band. Turns out they're an excellent bluegrass act, and if you like that kind of thing, you can't go wrong by listening to them. They've got like 9 albums out, and the new one is great. I also blogged about the new one by High on Fire, which is called Electric Messiah. I have the same feeling about this one that I do every High on Fire album. I wish I liked it a little bit more, although I do like it. I really want to be a fan of this band. I can hear the Motorhead influence. I can hear a lot of stuff that really appeals to me in them, but for some reason I just can't quite get there. And Electric Messiah has gotten me closer than most of their stuff. I probably need to listen to it a few more times and maybe I'll be there, but I'm not quite there. And that's kind of how I feel there. FYI, the band The Hold Steady, who I love, has been releasing singles on their own Bandcamp page, much like mine, over the past year. They've put out probably close to an album's worth of stuff, and it's all great, and that's all ineligible because it's singles. But check out The Hold Steady's Bandcamp page. It's absolutely, they're putting out great stuff that's worth your time that I really hope they consolidate into an album someday soon. The other thing that was absolutely ineligible for this list, but that I have to talk about, is the newly released David Bowie Glastonbury 2000 album. Wow. Great live album. It's in roughly the same era that I fell in love with Bowie during, and because I think his Bowie at the Beeb set contained a concert from that same band and that same basic tour, and Glastonbury is just a different performance. In places, I definitely prefer the thing that I've been familiar with for a long time, but Glastonbury is breathtaking in places. That version of Under Pressure is phenomenal. He mentions that he had laryngitis earlier in the week, right before he does Life on Mars, and asks the audience to help him out if he should, you know, lose any notes. And then he sang it so beautifully, I almost cried. Because I was listening to it driving around in my car for the first time in the rain, sort of in stop-and-go traffic, and it was just the perfect kind of... That's how I love to listen to David Bowie. Maybe not the traffic part, but the rain and a dark night and Bowie kind of goes together, and it was just sort of the perfect time to listen to that. And I haven't watched the DVD that goes with it yet, because it's a CD and DVD set. Haven't watched the DVD yet. That's my plans for this upcoming weekend over New Year's, because I got nothing planned for New Year's, folks. I got nothing. So I'm going to sit around and watch David Bowie and probably cry. The Glastonbury performance is beautiful. If you're a David Bowie fan, you need to pick that up. This brings us into the sort of bottom five of my list, because I always do a top 10 and then like another five or so. This year I did five that probably should or could be on the list, but just didn't quite make it. And so my bottom five, I guess my 15 through 11, are Laura Jane Grace's Bought to Rot. Laura Jane Grace, of course, known as the lead singer of Against Me. She put out a solo album, Bought to Rot. There's some band name connected to that. It could be anything. It's Laura Jane Grace's solo album. And it's a good punk album. It's a lot better than Against Me's previous offering, which I think was called Shapeshift with Me, if memory serves. It's a much better album than that. It's what I wanted out of that. It's got an attitude that I really like, that LJG, as I like to call her, definitely puts forward in her better stuff. I like this album a lot. The thing that throws me about it is some of the lyrics are contradictory. Some of them are just flat out incorrect. There's a song on there that is about her disdain for Chicago, which apparently is about a breakup that she had with her ex-wife. I think I'm right about that, but I'm a little hazy on Laura Jane Grace's personal history, romantic history. It's none of my business, but what she writes in her songs, I pick up on from time to time. I believe ex-wife. In fact, I think she even says that it's a divorce song in the song I'm thinking of. Anyway, the song in question is describing Laura's disdain for Chicago, and at the end says that Chicago, one of the biggest problems with Chicago, something like this, is that it's way too close to Missouri, so apparently hates Missouri too, as a whole. So bear that in mind, by the way, any Against Me fans when they tour here. That song is so bafflingly geographically incorrect that it almost makes me wonder if she's ever been to either Chicago or Missouri, because it just is so far off, and yet stated with such arrogant confidence that it sort of makes it perfect that she's just wrong. So I have a lot of fun with this album, even in the places where I disagree with it. So Laura Jane Grace's Bought to Rot in at number 15. And at number 14 is David Byrne's offering from this year, American Utopia, one of the first albums I bought this year, if memory serves, one of the first new albums I bought this year. David Byrne, of course, former Talking Heads and current David Byrne, in case you are living in the dark as to who that is somehow. Good album. Weird album. The first time I listened to that album, I was listening to it in my car. I had my player on shuffle. I had no idea, and I heard it out of order the first time. I realized that and then re-listened to it in the correct sequence, and it didn't make a damn bit of difference. It was the same album. It was just as confusing, just as back and forth, just as low-key and suddenly dancey in places. Dissonant, I guess, in places. It's difficult to describe. It's sort of a folk album if folk artists had been aware of electronica, which I guess is what David Byrne is these days. I like it. I like it a lot. It's confusing, and it makes you think, and it draws you in, and some of the lyrics are great. Some of the lyrics are terrible, but some of the lyrics are great. It's sort of a perfect David Byrne album. It didn't quite crack the top 10, but I was real conflicted about that, because I sort of wanted to move it up a little. But the aspects of it that I'm not as big a fan of are present enough that it didn't quite make the top 10. But that said, it's a quintessential David Byrne album. If you like him, you should pick it up. I really like it. I really like him. I'm a bigger Talking Heads fan than I am his solo stuff. No offense to Mr. Byrne. I'm sure that drives him fucking nuts. But, that's how it is. But American Utopia is a really great album. I've listened to it a lot this year. I'm going to continue listening to it. It's one of those I'm a little bit conflicted about not putting in the top 10, but it's so weird. It just didn't quite crack it, but it did definitely get into the top 15 and is one I've gone back to a lot. In at number 13 is Metric's Art of Doubt. I got in on Metric during the Synthetica album. What was that, like 2014, I think? 2013? I think the year before Lou Reed died, whenever that was. I'm saying that because Lou Reed does a guest vocal on that album is why that came to mind. Synthetica was a great album. It's my favorite Metric album. I think it was my album of the year that year. If not, it was definitely in the top two or three. I believe it was the album of the year, though, that year, because it just took my breath away. I was in Vintage Vinyl, and they started playing it. And just sort of a key intro, and the first lines of the album are, I'm just as fucked up as they say. And I went, I like this! And I picked up a copy and just couldn't get it on my player for months. And so that was my buy-in point with Metric. Although, actually, I had previously before that picked up the Live It Out album because I'd heard Monster Hospital and I liked it. And that is so not representative of what they do, but I liked it anyway and listened to it a lot. So I got into them a little bit before Synthetica, but I got in full bore with Synthetica and I've kept up with them since. Art of Doubt is a really good album. Really, really cool keyboard-driven passages, as you expect from Metric, but really cool rock stuff, too. I think that if I had bought this before the start of December, it's been out for a couple of months, but if I had bought this before the start of December, it would probably have cracked into the top 10, but I probably haven't lived with it quite enough. This feels like one that I'm going to next year think was an oversight when I look back on it. But yeah, Metric's Art of Doubt, great Metric album, great album. It's really good. I know people who are not into Metric that listened to it and said, yeah, that's pretty good. So that's when you can do that with someone who's a non-fan, you're doing something right. So they're definitely doing something right on Art of Doubt. I recommend it. Number 12, Kurt Vile's Bottle It In. Kurt Vile is one of those guitar players who... If you're wondering where all the guitar players went, check out Kurt Vile and check out several country music guys. Jason Isbell comes to mind, although he's not really country. And moving on, Kurt Vile, good guitar stuff, man. His whole shtick is kind of writing songs that make you forget that you're driving and need to pay attention to stoplights. That's like his whole thing, and it's really pretty stuff, but with a little bit of a gritty edge to it, and lyrically all over the place. It's every Kurt Vile song I've ever listened to has felt like the soundtrack to like a daydream. Maybe you've got a mild fever, and I mean that in the best way. And Bottle It In is another one of those that if I had lived with it a little bit longer, maybe I'd make the top 10. It's It's a really good album. I don't know how better to describe it other than you will lose track of where you're driving to if you listen to it while you're driving, so maybe listen at home. That's why I bought it on the vinyl. I knew I could space out in my own living room. I can't do it while I'm driving, man. But it's beautiful work. He put out a great album with Bottle It In, and I highly recommend it. And at number 11, breaks my heart that it's not in the top 10, but I had to talk about it anyway. Elvis Costello's Look Now. It was a real struggle not to put it in the top 10, and I'm sad that it's not in the top 10 because this, I mean, it's been a long time since the last Elvis Costello record, man. This might be the last Elvis Costello record. His health has been questionable in the past year. I believe he had a cancer diagnosis recently that I actually haven't heard an update on, but he's been touring, so I guess it's not going too bad. Who knows how many more Elvis Costello records we have. It breaks my heart that it didn't quite crack into the top 10, but here's why. Look Now is exactly what I want from Elvis Costello at this point in his career. His music is, I described it on my blog as, it's like listening to a fine wine. It's a beautiful record. It's perfect if you're a latter years Elvis Costello fan. That's why it didn't make the top 10, because it's perfect if you're a latter years Elvis Costello fan, which I am, and which a lot of people are, but a lot of people want to hear Pump It Up, and they want to hear Allison, and they want to hear Radio, and they want to hear Watching the Detectives, and Peace, Love, and Understanding, which was written by Nick Lowe. People want to hear that stuff, and this won't appeal to that crowd, which is a shame, because that crowd's out of their goddamn mind, because they're missing out on a lot of great Elvis Costello records if all they've got is the greatest hits. But the tone of Look Now, the tone of his recent, well, more recent work, you can hear that he worked with Burt Bacharach. You know, and I love that. I think it's beautiful. I think it's gorgeous. In my heart, it's a top 10 album. But just knowing that it's not the Elvis Costello record I would hand to somebody if they said, hey man, I'd like to get into Elvis Costello, what do you recommend? That kept it out of the top 10. And that's heartbreaking to me because I really want to say to that person, hey, you know what? He just put out an album this year, go check it out. But that's not what I would do. I'd probably end him a greatest hits, to be honest with you. Maybe an edited greatest hits, in fact, because the two-disc greatest hits I have gets a little long in disc two. And that's me speaking as a huge Elvis Costello fan, but Look Now is a genuinely great record. It's a genuinely gorgeous record. I love this record. It's just shy of being a top 10 record, and that breaks my heart. As much as I love it. And that's certainly no diss to the other albums that didn't make it either, because I'm really only talking about stuff that I like or that I want to like more in doing this. So that's it's no shame to be mentioned as an honorable mention and not make the list in a Derek Brank list, which are all way longer than they should be and way more complicated with a moving target of qualifications and thought processes. It's no shame to be mentioned on the same blog page as my top 10. But I don't know, man. There's a big part of my heart that wants to rearrange. Maybe number 10 and number 11 are kind of interchangeable here on this year's list, because I've actually got some reservations about what I do have at number 10. We'll get into that in just a second. In between the 15 through 11 and 10 through 1, couple more or less honorable mentions, just mentions of things that were ineligible, but that were worth mentioning. My favorite single of this year, definitely Rufus Wainwright's Sword of Damocles. I'm a huge Rufus Wainwright fan. I saw him for the first time in concert this year. That's one of my favorite concerts of this year. Don't worry, I'm not going to do that list too, but Rufus was one of my favorite concerts of this year. He had not yet debuted Sword of Damocles when I saw him, but he debuted it on the James Corden show. He sang that song on the James Corden show, kind of out of nowhere. Didn't know he had a new single. To my knowledge, he was doing his opera. But he released this beautifully written song that is just an out-and-out indictment of the Trump administration, which incidentally there should be other indictments of him by now, but Rufus Wainwright passing judgment on the Trump administration very poignantly, very pointedly, and very beautifully with Sword of Damocles. Highly recommend it. It's on Rufus's Bandcamp page. It seems like I started a trend by having a Bandcamp page. I highly recommend finding that, seeking it out. Might take you a little bit more Googling than usual, like Rufus Wainwright, Bandcamp will probably get you there. It's a great single, and I think it's like a dollar, so it's worth it. It's great stuff, especially if you like anything else in Rufus's career. It's a perfect fit with the rest of what he does. Also wanted to mention a live album. Of course, I'm going to talk about Jason Isbell's Live at the Ryman. I've talked about that elsewhere on the show. I'm not going to spend a ton of time with it. Jason Isbell, incidentally, was also my favorite concert of this year. I gushed about that for probably about 3 weeks on the show. You can go back. The concert was September 10th, I think, this year. That's how much that show meant to me, man. It's December. It's almost January, and I still remember that that was September 10th. That's what that show meant to me, for a number of reasons. And the Ryman album is great. It's beautiful. It's the band that I loved. It's the band that I got to see, minus Amanda Shires, who was not with him the night in St. Louis. But it's a really good listen. Pick up Jason Isbell's Live at the Ryman. Probably not a bad introduction to his work if you're unfamiliar with him, in fact. Okay. Let's do the top 10. What do you say? I'm going to do it in reverse order because that's how I did the bottom five or whatever, the 15 through 11. I'll probably blow through this kind of quick because I've talked about most of it on past shows, and you can seek that out if you want to. Number 10, debatably Elvis Costello's Look Now, but what I actually listed was the Jayhawks, Backroads, and Abandoned Motels. I have a few reservations about that actually being in the top 10 because it's stuff that the main guy, Gary Louris, wrote for other projects and other performers that he did for the first time here with the Jayhawks. And that's a real fine line. Because my qualifications are it can't be old material, it can't be re-releases, it can't be, you know, it has to be new material released this year, etc. These are all new recordings. It's released for the first time this year with the Jayhawks as the band. It's really borderline with my own criteria. But I'll tell you this, I keep returning to it and I keep listening to it and it felt like it needed to be there. While I'm talking to you now, I wrote the blog post and I was so sure that it was at number 10. And I'm talking to you now and I feel like Elvis Costello's Look Now was number 10 and Jayhawks, Backroads, and Abandoned Motels is number 11. I don't know, man. Maybe that's a multiple choice, but Jayhawks, Backroads, Abandoned Motels, I talked about that pretty extensively a couple of times here on the show. I like the album a lot, and I feel like it's just barely eligible for a top 10, and it ended up at number 10. At number 9 is Father John Misty's God's Favorite Customer. I did not love Father John Misty's previous album, Pure Comedy. I talked about that on the show. I felt like that album was a little bit one note, especially lyrically, because Pure Comedy, the theme was just over and over again. There's no God, by the way. Was just kind of like he may as well have called that album There's No God, by the way. fine, you can believe that if you want to. I don't care what Father John Misty believes about, you know, theology, and he's free to express it. I just felt like it got really repetitive, both in lyrical subject and also musically. God's Favorite Customer is the answer to that problem. God's Favorite Customer is an absolute turn back in the right direction. It's fun, it's silly in places, it's weird, it's catchy, it's got a variety of subjects to it, it's got a variety of sounds and tones to it. I like it a lot. It's a great Father John Misty album. My favorite Father John Misty album will always be I Love You, Honey Bear, but I like this one a lot too. It might be in second place, and not just because he mentions Jason Isbell in one of the songs. For those unfamiliar with Father John Misty, here's what I wrote on my blog. I wrote, quote, "It's very hard to describe Misty's vibe, also known as Jay Tillman. Sometimes there are trumpets. That doesn't help, does it? It's like he took Lawrence Welk or one of the old school band leaders and shoved a rock band up his ass and told everybody to pay more attention to the lyrics than they normally would, and then started dancing funny as a distraction. That's it. That's what Father John Misty's like, and that's, you take that and you listen to it on God's Favorite Customer, and it makes a lot of sense. I really enjoyed this album. I'm glad to have him back on my top 10 list rather than in my pile of disappointments, which is where Pure Comedy was last year. And I'm going to say again, though, about Pure Comedy, maybe I just don't get the joke. Maybe it's me. But I enjoyed this album a lot better. I enjoyed God's Favorite Customer quite a bit more, and I highly recommend it. In at number 8, a great, great folk-slash-country album in John Prine's The Tree of Forgiveness. There's not a lot I can say about this. It's a beautiful record by somebody at the tail end of his career, summing up some of what he's been trying to say all this time. And it's absolutely beautiful, it's absolutely gorgeous. It would be perfect on an autumn day with a gentle rain shower in the background, or maybe with a nice fire in a fireplace somewhere or at a fire pit. It's just a gorgeous record. I may have said gorgeous quite a bit during this recording. I apologize if that's the case. I tend to get repetitive when I do these lists. Tree of Forgiveness, great album. Not a lot I could say about it other than it's beautiful folk music. And folk is probably unfair. Country, Americana, it's very acoustic-y in vibe, and that always appeals to me, and I hope it appeals to you too, because you need to hear that album. Complete left turn from there. Number 7 is Guided by Voices Space Gun. Surprisingly, the only new Guided by Voices album we got this year. Bob Pollard, the frontman of the band, has played on over 100 albums. And his, Guided by Voices tends to release like a couple a year. And this was the only one we got. And it's a good one. It feels like Guided by Voices when they're focused and when they're at their weird alt-rock best. I think it was a great idea that he put Bobby Bear Jr. in the band. I've talked about that on the show before. Good ad, because I can hear that writing all over it, and I can hear that feel all over it with Bobby Bear in the band. Bobby Bear Jr. Space Gun's a great Guided by Voices record. It's cool rock music that's slurred hastily through the lips of a guy who can't remember all of his melodies anymore. It's kind of perfect. I like it a lot. It's a lot of fun. And like I said, it's a Guided by Voices album where it sounds like they actually focused and tried. So that's kind of nice to have. Guided by Voices Space Gun in at number 7. And at number 6, Frank Turner's Be More Kind. I got into Frank Turner when he was very much more acoustic, although acoustapunk, I guess, would be the thing to call him. Folk punk. Is the England Keep My Bones album is where I came in. And he's got great stuff. He's got a great tone. He's got a great feel. He's not as acoustic as he used to be. He's much more electric, but the heart is still there. The passion's still there. The sort of folky feel is still there, even though he's electric and loud. The spirit is still there. And it's all over Be More Kind. There's good advice all over it, including the phrase Be More Kind. And catchy stuff. He is a songwriter like no other working today out of England, I don't think, anyway. And I highly recommend Be More Kind. It's a good starting point into what he's doing these days. And it might be a good starting point into his stuff overall, although my favorite album is still England Keep My Bones. Be More Kind, definitely with a bullet in the Frank Turner catalog, as far as I'm concerned. Number 5 is Amanda Shire's To the Sunset. I've talked about this elsewhere on the thing before. Show? Podcast? What are we doing here? This thing that you're listening to. I've talked about Amanda Shire's To the Sunset on this, whatever it is, before this year, pretty recently, I think, even, because I got in the vinyl edition that's autographed and whatnot. That's on the blog somewhere. Go over to the blog, read about it. Listen to that episode if you missed it. I don't care. Look, I talked about it recently. I like it a lot. I forgot to go to the fucking show when she was in town. I meant to go to that. The person I really wanted to go with couldn't make it, and I even set about the task of asking a couple other people if they wanted to go. Just never followed up, and the next thing I knew, the show had come and gone. I don't know what happened to me. I don't know. I don't know how I missed that. I don't know what happened in my brain. I know that I was very upset that week. I was not having a good week at all. I was in a very bad place. That probably contributed. I was unhappy. I flat out missed the fucking show, and I don't know how I did that to myself, because it's a great album. To the Sunset has some really cool stuff on it. She's known for being a lot more laid back, a lot more Americana driven, and this sounds like her making a real effort to put out a rock album and to be called Americana a little bit less. But at the same time, she's still fronting the band with a fiddle, so it's a difficult line. But it feels like she was willfully being more rock on this album, and her band sounds great. She sounds great. It's got some really killer songwriting and some really great lyrics on it. It's a lot of fun, and it's dark in places, and I like To the Sunset a lot. It cracked the top five. It started the top five. In at number four, an album I very recently talked about, Coheed and Cambria's The Unheavenly Creatures. What a great album. What a great Coheed album. It's they brought their A-game from moment one. I've said before that when I was listening to it, I bought it on vinyl. And, you know, vinyl is about 18 minutes a side, and this is a 3LP situation, so you've got to flip over the record about every 18 minutes or put a new record on. And the first time I listened to it, all 3LPs, I don't think I sat down between flips. It was just engaging and cool and big and loud and catchy, and they just hit it out of the park on all points for me on this one. Like it a lot. Looking forward to this being the unfolding saga, at least for the time being, because I hear they've got several more lined up in this series. Looking forward to it a lot, and this album absolutely knocked my socks off the first time I heard it. So Coheed and Cambria's The Unheavenly Creatures, in at number four. And at number three, one of the early ones I bought this year is The Decemberists' I'll Be Your Girl. I avoided becoming a Decemberists fan for as long as I could, but I had Sons and Daughters stuck in my head for about a year off of The Crane Wife, and I just dove in and decided, you know what, I give up. I clearly like what they do. I don't know why I'm depriving myself of it, other than it's being a Decemberists fan is just another reason for somebody to call me a hipster. So I think I was just ducking it for a while. Look, sometimes hipsters have access to things I enjoy, like hats and things like that. And The Decemberists is on that list. I really like what they do. I'll Be Your Girl is a great album. It sounds like The Decemberists, which is one of those hard things to do when you're a dozen albums in or whatever they are. They've got, I think they're into the double digits of how many albums they've got out there. It's hard to sound like the band that people fell in love with, but like, I put on The Crane Wife and then I put on I'll Be Your Girl, and there's a difference there. There's a little bit of a shift in how they're approaching things. Of course there is. Years have gone by and they've aged, but I can tell that it's the same band, and they still seem to have a lot of the same sensibility about how they craft songs. They've just gotten, they've just grown and matured in how they do it. And whether you, in your view, that's better or worse, their approach has changed a little bit, but it's clearly the same band, and that's hard to do. Memo to Arcade Fire. This one has catchy stuff on it. The title track, I'll Be Your Girl, Everything Is Awful, has been stuck in my head for months. I can't get it out of my head. I absolutely adore that song. There's a lot on this album to love, and I love every part that you're supposed to. So Decemberists, I'll Be Your Girl is in at number three. At number two, frontman of Dinosaur Jr., Jay Maskus, put out a solo album called Elastic Days. And it is damn near perfect. I don't want to keep saying just before I say things about the albums I like, but it's just a wonderful listen. There's not a bad song on it, man. I think I mentioned that the last episode, that I was thinking about putting it at number one, because there's not a bad song on it. And, like, I was humming along with songs the second time I listened through. They stuck in my head from the first time. And his solo career is a lot more laid back than Dinosaur Jr. You hear more acoustic guitars and more kind of softer stuff, and I like that a lot, and I like his solo stuff quite a bit. Tied to a Star is probably my favorite Jay Baskett solo album, but Elastic Days stands up there right next to it, right next to Tied to a Star, right next to Several Shades of Why. It fits in with that stuff really, really well. It's a great album. It's super catchy. It's laid back, although a little bit more electric than some of the other two albums that I just mentioned were. Great stuff, man. And it sounds like if Dylan hadn't written so much bullshit and had just recorded the good stuff. Because look, I know I'm messing with a sacred cow when saying that, but Dylan wrote a lot of bullshit, and Jay Maskus seems to have a better filter for that sort of tone. I'm making the Dylan comparison not necessarily because of volume of work or because of significance of work or anything like that. Just sort of in tone, the way Maskus presents his vocal reminds me a lot of Dylan, and I may be the only person that sees that. I don't know. But Maskus puts me in mind of Dylan a little bit, just in how he presents himself and how he presents his lyrics. He's very kind of mumbly, and it sounds like he probably had to get up real close on the microphone so that it recorded at a loud enough level. Yeah, he's got that kind of voice, and he's had that voice forever. He's had that voice in Dinosaur Jr. I don't know how he does it live, but his solo stuff a little bit puts me in mind of Dylan, but I kind of like it better than I like a lot of the Dylan stuff. Sorry, don't crucify me. Still love Blonde on Blonde. Still love Blood on the Tracks, etc., etc. But if I'm in the mood for that genre, I'm probably going to reach for Maskus before I reach for Dylan at this point. And that's kind of a weird place to be. I feel like I'm saying way too much about this. I feel like I'm exposing like a raw nerve here and saying any of that. But I highly recommend Jay Maskus's music. And if you're going to Google him, he's just the letter J and then M-A-S-C-I-S, Jay Maskus. Great stuff. Elastic Days is in at number two because it's phenomenal. Which brings us to number one. Number one on my list for 2018 is the new album by Canadian pop rock, I guess, power rock band, Sloan. Sloan, who you've probably not heard a single of if you live in the States, and that's a shame because they're great. One of Canada's longest surviving rock bands, up there with, I guess, longevity with the Tragically Hip, although I guess the Hip... God rest Gord Downie. He passed away within the last year, even. And so Rush is retired. So I guess maybe Canada's longest surviving band that isn't Neil Young. but if you live in the States, you probably haven't heard of them. Sloan is great. They write cool, fun, upbeat rock music. At least mostly it's that. Some of it gets a little bit sad and drag ass. Usually that's the drummer who all four members of the band write songs and produce their own songs in the band, and the drummer takes some weird turns, but they got a guy in there that writes like Light FM stuff and like AM Gold type stuff, and the guitarist Jay, and then you got Patrick Pentland writing just awesome pop rock radio standards, or what should be radio standards. It's a crime that they're not in the States. They are in Canada. And you got Chris Murphy up front doing much the same, although with a little bit more of a punk rock attitude, which is weird because Patrick's into more of that type of music. But I know way too much about this band now. I got in and I fell in hard. Point is, 12 is a great album. It will appeal to a variety of people who just want a fun rock album. It should be quintessential springtime listening for you. Like when we're in winter right now, spring's coming up next. buy this album, maybe set it aside till March, and the first nice day, pop it in, you'll thank me. Sloan's album 12, which is their 12th album in their career, by the way, would be why they named it that, which makes sense, probably, to most of you. 12 is a great album. I keep coming back to it. I saw them in concert on this tour. It was a great show. They played most of the album, and I loved hearing those songs that fit in seamlessly with their other stuff. A lot of fun. Really fun album. Really good album. I think when I first reviewed it, I said something about not liking the drum mix, and that was a mistake on my part, because the drums do feel like they're mixed, probably with just a couple of stereo microphones. Like, they didn't, you don't hear every little tap of every little stick tap on, the head of the drum. You don't hear it bouncing off the tom or whatever, like you do on so many productions now, but... It seems like the drums were recorded very old school, and to me, that's really appealing, and I don't know why I judged it harshly the first time I heard it. I think at the time I was mixing my own album, and I just sort of thought, I know what I'm doing with drums, and I just overanalyzed wrong, because the drum mix is fine, it sounds great. The cymbals are a little bit more out front than maybe I would have done personally, but so what? Who cares? That still sounds cool. 12 is my album of the year by Sloan. I'm babbling at this point, folks. I'm exhausted. This has been a marathon for me. You think it's hard listening to this? I've got to do all this talking. I'm exhausted from all this talking. It's the day after Christmas. I've done nothing but talk and communicate and be around people for the past couple of days. This is exhausting right now. I'm just reading a list into a microphone is wearing me out. But Sloan is it at number one. Had a pretty strong list this year. It was a weird year, though, man. It was a hard year to figure out what my list would be, because there weren't a lot of those albums that just jumped out and grabbed me, like have been in previous years. Like last year, we had, I think my top 10 last year, any entry on numbers 1 through 10 would have been a number 1 any other year. But it just happened that we had a one in a million year last year where just so much great stuff came out. In last year's list, we had Guided by Voices again, Old 97s were there, Craig Fenn, Jason Isbell, Living Color, for God's sake, U2, Ray Davis, who is in my honorable mentions for this year, but I was a little bit disappointed in Americana 2, Amy Mann on last year's list, Manchester Orchestra, Ryan Adams. Last year was just a stellar year that you don't get very often, and it made this year really hard to deal with because there weren't as many albums that just jumped out and grabbed me and shook me around and stuff, but a couple of them on the top 10 definitely did do that. Sloan's 12 at number 1 is one of those albums that just kind of grabbed me and held on tight. Decemberists did that too, so did Maskus. So did Amanda Shires, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was a weird year, but I like the list that I ended up with. I gotta say, I think in my heart, I'm revising to put Elvis Costello at number 10 rather than at number 11. My apologies to the Jayhawks, and my apologies to anybody who read my blog and thinks otherwise. But yeah, I don't know. I think that Elvis Costello record needs to move up for a variety of reasons. That's it. That's my top 10. We'll play a little bit of music and wrap this thing up, put a bow on it, and you can go back to whatever it is you do between stints of listening to me. So here's a little bit more music. So thanks for listening to all that. That was a just kind of a rapid-fire marathon of albums, wasn't it? I like doing the top 10 list. I like doing lists of any kind, and I hope you enjoyed that. I hope maybe you listened to a couple of the things that you hadn't heard of before now, or maybe that you remember me mentioning on previous episodes and thought, oh yeah, I've got to get back to that, and now you've got the opportunity to. There's a lot of stuff that I bought that I didn't mention too, but I'm not going to keep talking with that. I hope you enjoyed that list. Thanks a lot for listening to the show. We'll be back in 2 weeks with something else. It'll be 2019, and who knows what we'll talk about. That's the future. Who knows what happens in the future? Only science fiction writers, I would imagine. In the meantime, I've continued playing Stardew Valley, I guess is a thing to say. I now have a wife in the game and two kids. The kids are respectively named Taco Bell Dog and David Bowie. David Bowie is a girl. Taco Bell Dog is a boy. I have a bunch of ducks and chickens and rabbits and a dog, and it's still fun, and I'm enjoying my stupid fake farm. It's a lot of fun for me, so I'm still playing that. I'll be playing that for the foreseeable future, I'm sure. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you'll enjoy whatever I do next. I don't know what I'm gonna do next, man. I got some cool stuff for Christmas. I'll probably talk about some of that. There's some stuff I'll be watching and listening to for the first time following Christmas. Who knows? Who knows where this might go? I'm looking forward to 2019. I'm looking forward to carrying the show on into 2019. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, folks. It's been a fun one for me. I like doing this, exhausting as it may be to marathon one of those top 10 lists. Thanks a lot for making me part of your week, part of your day, part of your whatever. I really appreciate it. I appreciate every listener I get, and it's cool when people talk to me about this thing, especially in real life when someone walks up to me and says, "Hey, I enjoyed this on the show," or "Yeah, I like the internet comments and stuff too. In fact, I'd like to have some more internet comments if you're so inclined." But I enjoy talking to folks about stuff like this too, because as I always say, the only thing more important than collecting it is talking about it, and that's that's what we exist here to do on Empty Checking. We empty out the checking account and we talk to you about cool stuff that we think you might enjoy. I don't know why I'm saying we, the royal we, as though there's, you know, more than just me in this room. I do all of this myself. I talk about stuff I like, and I hope you like it too. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for your time and your energy and your appreciation of the show and whatnot. And as I say every week that I say anything, check us out next time. Yeah, Elvis Costello's number 10.